If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here in the early morning hours of Friday, I had tweeted out last night that I was going to wait and record the Friday show later after the ball game. However, I slept for a while, woke up wide awake, and I thought, well, let me get some something productive done, and then I can always go back to sleep for a little while since we don't play until 2. So here we are. So by the time you guys listen to this, I suspect many of you will be up and running, but you're sleeping now. That's right. You got to get up pretty early in the morning to get by old Rose Bowl. But here we are. Good show for you today. And we're going to preview the Missouri State Series. We'll look ahead to Mississippi State and women's and men's basketball this weekend. Got a great top 10 list. Got a lot of reaction. A lot of messages from you guys about that Lane Staley list. And yeah, Allison Chains. I mean, come on. You can't go wrong with Allison Chains. And so I've got something kind of special in that same vein that I don't think that you're going to see coming. And so I'm going to share that with you. I've done some research and put together a list that I think is very interesting. Yeah, for sure. But I hope that you are well today. It is Friday. Hope it is a payday for you. And perhaps it is for you biweekly and perhaps weekly wage earners. Get out and go do some fun things this weekend with those you love. It's always a good thing. These days, all I do is work. So, pretty excited too. Next month, I guess it's about 2 weeks now, I'm going to have the opportunity to go back to my old high school and speak to writing students there. And I'm excited about that. Should be a good time. I think they're probably more excited than maybe they should be, but it's okay to let people make a little bit of a fuss about you. But yeah, we'll go back and back to where it all began, and see if we can't sow some seeds in the minds of the next generation of Mississippi writers. I'm told the first meeting of the day will be with the AP composition students. You know, so they might be a little more serious about writing, but I wanted to do this. Just kind of went out there and put the bat signal out there and said, I don't know how to go about this, but I'd love to be able to go back. And wasn't long after that, heard from superintendent down there, and next thing you know, things are working. And so I'm excited. It'll be a good time. And I'll go down and have a Ward's hamburger. And spend the night with my mom, it's always a good thing. I don't get a chance to get home that much. And one of the things that I shared recently on Facebook, that I did the randoms, you know, occasionally, for those of you that follow along, is every time that I go back home, you know, I have these feelings of nostalgia, you know. And not all those memories are good, you know. I mean, let's just kind of take it for what it is. I left town, you know, kind of under difficult circumstances, but when I go back, I'm always so grateful. You know, I'm always so grateful. But I was the kind of person that, you know, if I stayed there, I was going to die there. And along with that, I suspect I would have had a very difficult life. What I mean by that is I think I would have had a life of unfulfilled promise. And that's one of those things, too, that I continue to work through. You know, I don't think that I've ridden my Led Zeppelin 4 yet. You know, I've written some things that people enjoy, and I get messages almost every single day, people praising me for the work on the dude. And there's always a few critics out there too. But it's so interesting. It's like the old speech about the man in the arena, right? Typically, the people that have the most to say are the people that put themselves out there to be judged, you know, the least. And I think it's important to understand that every opinion matters, but some matter more than others. I don't think we should live in an echo chamber where everybody's telling us how great we are. In fact, I take the dissenting opinions probably a little more to heart, because I'm always trying to find a little way to improve. And sometimes, you know, people send you things and it's just mean-spirited. It's true. And you got to learn to sort all through that. You can't let the negative comments of the minority outweigh the positive comments of the majority, but you still have to kind of pay attention to some of that stuff. And so I share that with you because there is value in every opinion if you were a creator. Like if you were the kind of person that, you know, that writes or sings or whatever, you're never going to please everybody. But just because somebody's not blowing smoke up your skirt doesn't mean they don't have a valid opinion. I think those things are important to understand. I'd also like to say, too, that I would like to express my personal support for the folks at the Clarksdale Press Register. I believe that's the name of the newspaper. Maybe you're aware of this, maybe you're not. We don't like to get too political on this show. We try to be apolitical. But I am very much an advocate for free press and free speech. I share this with people all the time. You know, it's not regular conversation that needs protection, right? And so the Clarksdale paper wrote an editorial because the city did not follow proper protocol when it came to a public meeting. Like they were passing a tax, and the city itself admits in the court filing that, you know, the young lady that was responsible for the notification just simply forgot to do it. Well, that's not a good enough excuse. Now, the paper itself kind of cast some aspersions, right, in their editorial, you know, kind of assigning motive about why the meeting would be held kind of behind closed doors and there wasn't public notice of this meeting. And I understand that may, you know, kind of draw some criticism, right? They didn't actually make an allegation, but they kind of insinuated some things. And some of that, too, is the better part of editorialism. And so it's important to understand that. Now, the Mayor Espy of Clarksdale, of course, I'm you know, getting all this through third parties. I'm not personally covering the story. But they filed for a temporary restraining order. And the a judge in this state granted the TRO and forced the paper to take the editorial down. That is very dangerous. It's also unconstitutional. And just so you guys know, too, cities cannot be defamed. Right? I don't know if you know that, but it's true. A city has no standing in a defamation case, because people have a right to protest. People have a right to be critical. People have a right to editorialize. Now, if you are an individual and you feel that those comments are dangerous and reckless and malicious, you have a right to sue for defamation. And as a person who has done that, I can tell you that sometimes you have grounds and standings to defend yourself and your reputation. But when you have not followed your civic duty and you have not followed the protocol that goes along with that for public notice, you are opening yourself up to rightful criticism. And just because you get your feelings hurt, you shouldn't be able to weaponize the legal system to kind of force the hand of somebody else. You know, we find some of these rights to be inalienable, and freedom of the press is one of them. Now, again, that's a separate action in and of itself. If you feel that the actions of the paper are libelous, then you have standing to file a civil lawsuit as an individual. But you don't get to go out there and weaponize the court system just because there is a story written about you that hurts your feelings. That's just not the way life works. And You know, I'm not a lawyer. I know many people play lawyers on the internet, and there are a lot of lawyers that play on the internet. But I've got some very good ones, and because of my standing in my profession and some of the things that have happened in my life, I am somewhat maybe more astute than the casual observer when it comes to defamation. I've never been sued for defamation, but I have sued others for defamation, and I am undefeated in defamation lawsuits. You know, and we could talk about that stuff too at length. But I think this is a shameful story, and it is getting national coverage, and it paints our state in a very negative light. And I suspect that this, you know, ruling will be stricken down. This TRO will be, you know, rescinded, and they'll go forward. But I believe the paper itself and the editor himself might actually have standing for a civil rights lawsuit against the city, you know, and perhaps against the court itself. You know, I think there, I don't know all the legalities behind that and who would be on the downside of the V, as they say in legal terms, but this is inappropriate. This is outrageous. It is wildly unconstitutional that the government, which that's what the judiciary is, it is, you know, a branch of the government, state government, can step in and tell a newspaper what they can and cannot print. It's a very slippery slope, especially when many of the allegations that are brought by the paper are admitted to by city officials themselves. There's one line in there that is a little bit sticky. You know, he kind of suggests, you know, were there kickbacks involved in this? And he goes, well, there's no evidence to support that at this time. Words to that effect. And apparently that's the line of offending nature. And so they didn't like it, that they was kind of, you know, suggested that maybe they were on the take. And I think any of us would feel the same way. But again, if you feel that your reputation has been defamed, there is remedy for that in the court system. But to use a district judge or a chancery court judge to force the hand of someone in print media because you don't agree with what they had to say about your city is a bit much. And I kind of joked on Twitter yesterday or last night. I said, if cities can start suing people for defamation, then there are a lot of sports writers out there that are better get ready for the process server to show up after all their pithy comments about Starkville over the years. And many of those people that have written about Starkville have never even visited Starkville. And then that's a joke. We don't need the city of Starkville to take up arms here and begin to kind of push this thing forward. But I wanted to speak about that because I am very much an advocate for your right to free speech, whether I agree with it or not. You know, and we go back to this all the time. It's not safe speech that needs protection, right? It's controversial speech that needs protection. You know, we fought a revolution over that. It's important to understand that you have a right to say those things. It doesn't make you free of those consequences for any of the things that you may say, but nobody has a right to tell a newspaper what they can and cannot print. Nobody. And so I wanted to get that out there because I don't know if you're aware of the story. I don't know how you feel about the story. And but again, that, it's two separate actions, right? Right, and that's important to understand. The city has no standing in a defamation suit. And the fact that this TRO was granted, I think it's very dangerous and reckless. That's how I see it. Because where does it stop, right? I mean, if this sets a precedent that if some city official out there, you know, around this great state of ours gets their feelings hurt over something, and not to mention, had the city done their job in the first place, had they posted the notice and notified the media as they should, then you wouldn't have had this reaction from the paper. Right? That's not to excuse any conduct thereof, But when you don't do your job and then somebody calls you on the carpet for having a closed door meeting, which should be a public proceeding, I think not only is it unconstitutional, it's incredibly petty. And so these people need to be held accountable. And I understand there are some elections coming. And I think it's not very wise if you're an elected official to take up arms against the print media. As Mark Twain wrote so eloquently so many years ago, never pick a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel, right? These are the opinion makers of our day. But nevertheless, I wanted to get that out there because of the fact I want you to educate yourself about this. But again, this is, and it's one legal expert said, wildly unconstitutional. And I absolutely agree. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. They're purveyors of the Constitution, right? I love the fact that we have the right to hamburgers. And we have the right to spring rolls. We have the freedom to enjoy them as we wish. There's nobody anywhere that can go out there and say, hey, you can't get ketchup on this. You have to get onions on that. You can have it your way, at Bulldog Burger Company, to borrow a phrase. I love Bulldog Burger Company, and I love the fact that I have the freedom to enjoy Bulldog Burger Company whenever I choose, because I live in a city that has the original Bulldog Burger Company right here on University Drive. Two other great locations to serve you. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Go by and declare your own rights and enjoy having the opportunity to break bread at one of Mississippi's finest eateries. Get that chocolate shake to go. You'll be glad you did. Ride that ride home with a smile. If you're new to Bulldog Burger Company, let me recommend the Bulldog itself. It's a great way to start. And then maybe on your second visit, you can branch out a little bit. But if you want to just go ahead and jump wide open in, maybe get the Smokehouse, the Pimentology, and ask about the specials. There's always something kind of new and fresh that you can check out when you're in town or on the way to town. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take a quick look ahead at Missouri State. You know, I spoke with Joey Hawkins earlier this week, the head coach of Missouri State. If you're a Jeans Page subscriber, you can go read that interview in its entirety. And so appreciative of both Stephen Rosen and Joey Hawkins to make a few minutes for me, during a busy time of year. You know, they're in season and they take some time to kind of, hey, share some comments with the Mississippi State folks that you can read only at jeanspage.com. And very appreciative of them taking the time to do that. They owe us nothing, you know. And that's the thing that, you know, all you can do is they tell you no. You know, you make the request and then we kind of see how things go. Next week may be a little more complicated with us playing three teams, but we'll see what we can come up with. But very much enjoyed the conversation. And if you've read that piece, you know that Joey Hawkins, the head coach of Missouri State, is from Canada. And he grew up playing ball with our Jacob Robson. How about that? The Maple Hammer. Remember that? In the John Cohen years? Yeah. So Robson, a teammate growing up with Missouri State's coach. Pretty cool. Small world, the baseball world. It is. So you guys are probably aware of this by now, but Missouri State went on the road last week and took 2 out of 3 from the Bearcats of Sam Houston. Now, Sam Houston out of Huntsville, Texas, has been a pretty solid mid-major the last several years, you know. And so that's not an insignificant win. Number one, it's tough to win on the road in any sport. But to go up there and beat a team, and I believe last year they went like 34-23. They were a winning team last year. And so you go in there and you take 2 out of 3 and put up 24 runs over the course of 3 days. They were scheduled to play Central Arkansas on Tuesday. They canceled that game very early in the week in advance of this snowstorm. And I got some great pictures of my grandgirls playing in the Northwest Arkansas snow. They love it, you know, and I love seeing those pictures. But so they should have all of their arms available this week, as should we. you know. I mean, we played on Tuesday night, but, you know, kind of space it out a little bit. Nobody should be unavailable this weekend if we need them. But let's take a look back at the numbers and just kind of take a look and see kind of how they got here. And granted, it's a small sample size, but it's worth discussing. And Missouri State is known as kind of a launch angle home run hitting team. A little cold weather last week. They only hit two bombs last week. Gave up four, but only hit two. And some of these names are difficult, right? One of them is very easy. Dylan Robertson, my cousin, I'm sure. He hits a home run. But Dylan needs to kind of get it going, though. He's only hitting the buck 67. And then Caden Bogenfoil. Yeah, we're going to go with that. Bogenpoil. Caden Bogenpoil. I don't know. He hit a tank, too. But, yeah, just two big flies last week. And that's kind of what they're known for. And that's one of the things. I think this cold weather might assist us with that. And when you've got a team that is so reliant on the home run, and then the air is thick and the ball doesn't travel quite as well, you know, we know we've been here for a lot of February baseball, right? It's tough to get one out of the yard in February, especially when we're having these temperatures. And, of course, we're moving the game up from 4-2 to try to avoid those really difficult temperatures tonight. It's so dicey, man, when you're having the guys go out there and fully exert themselves in cold weather. It's tough, especially on the pitching side. It's currently 19 degrees in Starkville. The high today is 42. And, you know, kind of looking through this, you know, the sun comes up and we get above freezing. And it'll be in the low 40s at game time and then be hovering around freezing by the time the game is over. Yeah, so probably pretty smart to go ahead and make that call. And I know it's a bit inconvenient for some of you, but we all have to make sacrifices. What matters most is the health of our players and the quality of our season. Of course, we want you to be here for all of it, but sometimes you just can't be. And this is one of those situations we kind of got to err on the side of caution. And I hate to use that phrase. We got so sick of it during the COVID year. But when it comes to the health of our players, we really can't be compromising. This is the right move. As a team, though, they hit just 274 last week, right? So, again, this is an offensive-minded team. Didn't have big offensive numbers last week. Pitching's always ahead of hitting this time of year, and then when you think about how tough the hitting day is, when the temperature is around freezing, it's just not a great thing. Now, they've been able to get outside a little bit at Missouri State, but it's a different dynamic doing a workout and then actually playing a game that they record the score in the paper. Tage Gohlert leads the team with five hits. He and Nick Rodriguez are both tied with a .500 average, both 5 of 10 on the year. Rodriguez, three doubles, also three RBIs, and Gohlert has the one extra base hit, but also three ribbies. But again, you know, 23 runs driven in this ball game, and it's pretty evenly distributed. Carter Bergman played in two games of the three and got four ribbies. You know, a couple of extra base hits there. But 29 hits, 10 of them doubles, two triples, and two home runs, as we mentioned. I did notice, too, and I think I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, three stolen base attempts and are cut down all three. One of the things that tells me is they're maybe not be extremely aggressive on the base paths, but also might not be a team that maybe is quite as fleet of foot as we may see. We play a team kind of like Kentucky. And kind of looking back at last year's numbers, just because I'm interested, right? Just 58 stolen bases and 70 attempts. And Nick Rodriguez was one of the leading base stealers last year with 10 of 14 attempts. The leading base stealer was Tyler Epstein, who is now gone, you know. And so 18 of your 58 stolen bases, at a minimum, have left the building. So I don't think this is a game that we're going to have – this series we're going to have to worry a ton about the running game. But when you don't get the big fly, you have to be aggressive, and people sometimes are willing to take chances. And so that's important to understand too. You know, how does everybody handle the elements? It's one thing to handle, you know, a road venue, and of course the crowds won't be nearly as boisterous as they will be here in a couple of weeks, and certainly in a couple of months. So the home field advantage in some respects is kind of negated by the weather. But when you got to go make something happen, you got to go make something happen. Looking at this team defensively, you know, just one error last weekend, you know, and some of that too is Sam Houston just, you know, really wasn't great offensively. But it wasn't like that, you know, the pitchers from Missouri State, at least the starters anyway, were just really dominating. Over a strikeout per, though, right? And in D1 baseball, that's pretty significant. But the bullpen itself, they had a couple guys out there. Jake Syverson is a guy that really just kind of jumps out at you a little bit. Syverson's ERA is not great. He is a guy that's somewhat hittable, I guess, but he works 2 1/3 innings and strikes out 6 hitters. So in 27 innings of action, they strike out 41, and a lot of that is attributed to the bullpen. And I think that is significant. You know, these you're not going to work deep in ball games this time of year. It's not going to happen. And they didn't last week. And they started, and this is a Canadian name, and I had to have Coach Hawkins pronounce it for me. I'm going to do my best. But Michael Yusupchuk, 3.86 ERA, got the start, worked. He's the Friday guy, played on Team Canada. 4.4 2/3 of an inning, allowed 6 hits, so over a hit per. But again, small sample size, allowed a couple runs, struck out 6, did not walk any. On Saturday, they're expected to throw Jackson Holmes. He had a very difficult outing last weekend. Just went 3 1/3, allowed 6 hits, 6 runs, struck out 5, walked 3. Also hit a batter. ERA of 16.20. We expect that to come down. But not a great outing. The Friday-Saturday guys, both right-handers. They're expected to come back with left-hander Tyler Charlton on Sunday. And probably gave the most quality start of the group last week. 1.69 ERA, works 5 1/3, 4 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 7 Ks, a couple doubles. Batting average against .235, which was the best among the three starters. And so you may get one or two, but it seems like Tyler Charlton, in the words of Joey Hawkins, has been their most experienced and efficient pitcher. So you go into Sunday, number one, facing the left-hander, but also, too, a lot of times when people look at the totality of their rotation, you know, you want to win Friday, Saturday, and just kind of hope that you can outslug people on Sunday. It appears that they're kind of, you know, snowbirding a little bit here, you know, is that a way to put it? Sandbagging, you know, saving one of their better arms for Sunday. And, of course, you know, that's in their league, I think that's going to be significant because the Missouri Valley is very competitive. They are picked to win that league, even though last year wasn't a great year. But offensively, you know, they're expected to be very good. We've talked about that, you know, in our preview of this season, and certainly, you know, the non-conference portion of our schedule. We know what Houston's going to look like, but this is a team, and again, it's easy to look at last year and say, you know, Steve, you know, they got 23-34 last year. But they bring some of those pieces back, you know, from a team that really hit the baseball well last year. You know, looking at home run numbers from last year, which is so incredibly interesting to me. You know, because, again, this is a team that basically plays in the middle of America, you know. They had 114 jacks last year. Yeah, and then allowed just 69. Now, granted, you know, some of the guys that were responsible for many of those big flies, like Cody Kelly out of St. Michael, Minnesota, you know, he had 13 bombs last year. We talked about Caden Bogenpohl. He's back. He had 20 last year. Dylan Leach, senior last year, right? He had 16. You know, Zach Stewart, that we mentioned him, just a sophomore outfielder. Looks a little bit like Cal Steven at Lebanon, Missouri. You know, he, big year, 21. Nick Rodriguez with 14. And so, again, you work through this. Of course, you're missing about half of those. But it's more of a product of the system than it is of personnel. Like, they go out and recruit players that kind of fit what they want from an offensive philosophy and then just kind of go from there. But, yeah, I expect to take the series. I won't be surprised if we drop one. We really don't need to drop one, but it's so early in the year you can kind of make it up. But I was thinking this week, if we go 3-1 this week, then that's going to be a good week considering who we're playing, right? I would rather have beaten Southern Miss and then drop one this weekend, but it is what it is. We can still go 3-1. And here's the thing. This Missouri State team is going to have the opportunity to help us summon the RPI because they're expected to win a lot of games this year. And you start, looking through this, they're going to Wichita State. Wichita State got walked off by Hawaii last night. But this is a team that's going to stack up some wins. They do have some other Power 5 opponents in the midweek. They're going to play Oklahoma State in April. They're going to play Kansas State in April. Of course, both of those teams were in the NCAA tournament last year. Kansas State, of course, wins a regional. Oklahoma State does not. And then they go to Missouri, and Missouri's going to be the last place team in this conference. But they're going to play them a couple times. They're going to play Arkansas too. And so this isn't going to be one of those mid-majors that just kind of becomes an anchor to your RPI, even if you win. So, we need to win this series and then root for those guys to go have a great year. All right, it's time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry. They don't tell you that when you're young. You're going to need somebody that has the expertise and know-how to get you to the closing table. It can be a very convoluted and complicated procedure. Work with someone that knows the nuance of the industry. That's Blair Chandler. His phone number, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair. You can call or text him direct today. Whether you're looking to refinance a home or buy a home, whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, let Blair Chandler get to work for you and have his 24 years of experience and know-how as arrows in your quiver, to coin a phrase. Blair is a bulldog through and through. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can because I know some of that money is going to wind up in the pockets of Mississippi State. Blair is a season ticket holder and a guy that rides a wave of emotion just like you do. So support one of our own. License to practice in multiple states. Reach out today. Again, 601-500-2344. Okay. Lots and lots of reaction to the Lane Staley list the other day. Even though it's all Alice in Chains saying songs we know, I had people that reached out about the book and kind of offered their thoughts about it, that so they're going to buy it too. One of the things that I've learned about life is that 99% of the stuff that people get pissed off about is not their business. I've read online, people are like, oh, this is so exploitive. The reality of it is, don't buy it, okay? If his mom is okay with it, then we should be okay with it too. Let's not be gatekeepers about things that are not in our possession. But nevertheless, I'm going to buy the book because I'm a Lane Staley guy. So people said, man, I wish we had more. So I'm going to give you more today. But we're going to go back a little bit before, and you can find the demos from this band on YouTube in their entirety. You can hear a little bit of some Alice in Chains early, attributes maybe. But they were an 80s hair band called Sleaze, S-L-E-Z-E. And you can just go to YouTube and put in the search browser there, Sleaze or Lane Staley, and these demos come up. There's, I guess, 7 songs, maybe. Is that right? Let me look here. You got Over the Edge. It is very, very 80s. You got King of the Cats, Lip Lock, Rock. Yeah, that sounds very much like a 80s song. Fat Girls, Sealed with a Kiss. A lot to this one. But yeah, check it out. I think you'll dig it. It's definitely different, right? So Sleaze, as they begin to move forward, they got this wild idea one day, just kind of sitting around about backstage pass designs and that sort of stuff. And they were talking about Alice in Wonderland because Sleaze was going to have the Welcome to the Wonderland tour. And that led to Alice in Wonderland and then eventually to Alice in Chains. Now, Lane's mom was against it. Said, hey, this is about bondage and exploitation of women. And so to kind of placate her, they changed it to Alice in Chains, like Guns N' Roses. But they did it right before Guns broke. So it wasn't necessarily copycatting, even though it kind of comes across that way. And then ultimately, they became something else. You know, I think that's important to kind of understand, too. That, the band Sleaze ultimately became Alice in Chains. And what's interesting about that is Lane was actually a drummer at the time. His original name is Lane Elmer. Yeah. His brother Ken recommended to some friends, so they let Lane try out because he really wanted to be a singer. And then eventually, a young guy by the name of Nick Pollock became the guitar player in Sleaze and then Alice in Chains. And he is the one that introduced Jerry Cantrell to Lane Staley. Yeah, how cool is that? So we're going to kind of work through the Sleaze tree, because just about all of these musicians went on to some success with other bands. Of course, Lane with Alice in Chains. And ultimately Mad Season. But some of these other guys did some pretty cool things too. So we're going to start with our number 10 song. Johnny Bacalus, who was a guitar player and bass player in another band at the time called Sanctuary. And he eventually made that a full-time gig. Their debut album came out. And the lead track on that album is a track called Battle Angels. Now, this was kind of in the infancy of darker metal. And so there was a lot of operatic singing. It's a little bit like Halloween, for those of you that kind of remember them. It's not so much the Hallows Eve, even Flotsam and Jetsam type stuff. Of course, Jason Newsted's early band. It's not like that. But it's like, there was so much in the 80s that was kind of, good timing and Maybelline rock and that sort of stuff. This was completely different. But heavier edge, but more of that operatic singing. So it wasn't like Candlemas or anything like that. Completely different. But again, an interesting band. All right. Eventually, Johnny left Sanctuary because the record company wanted Sanctuary to be more grunge because they were a Seattle band. And they're like, hey, there's more money in grunge. And so there was a lot of this, pressure from record companies to kind of chase trends. And so give Johnny some credit, rather than kind of give in to the record company's demands, he went out and started another band called Nevermore. There's another band called Nevermore that you guys know from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. That soundtrack, which is amazing, they had a track on there called Drinking Again. That's not that band. But this is a track that I think you'll like, and it sounds a little Alice in Chainsy. It's a track called Garden of Grey. From Nevermore. I think you'll dig it. Now, one of the bands that really excites me from this tree is a band that Nick Pollock put together after leaving Alice in Chains and being replaced by Jerry Cantrell and Alice in Chains. So, it gets kind of complicated, right? But Nick actually had a run with several bands. So our next four songs are going to be Nick Pollock bands. But a band that I think that you guys will really like. Like, if you really like the true Seattle sound, and I don't mean the corporate rock BS stuff they gave us later. Because many of these bands actually predated, many of the bands you know. But it's a band called My Sister's Machine. And it's a little different. It's got a little funk in some of the tracks. There is a great track, though, on the debut album from My Sister's Machine called Hands and Feet. And when you first hear that guitar, it sounds a ton like what Alice in Chains became. And so I think in many respects, when you think about the Jerry Cantrell thing, I think there was already maybe the beginning of an established style that Jerry just kind of bought into and then elevated. But I think you're really going to dig My Sister's Machine. And again, your introductory track is Hands and Feet. But I think you'll have fun with them. Again, if you're a band fan from that era, and many of you are, we get a lot of reaction to early 90s rock, that My Sister's Machine may be a band you don't know as well, but you probably should. All right, after My Sister's Machine kind of went away, and these songs aren't necessarily ranked in my favorite. I'm kind of working through this chronologically. There was a band called Tanks of Zen. Tanks of Zen. This is a little different. It's more of an acoustic type project. In some respects, it's a little bit like Days of the New. Now, vocally, not the same. But there are some elements of this that if you were fans of maybe, Jar of Flies, and you were fans of Days of the New, I think this may scratch you where you're itch. Tanks of Zen. They did a concept album basically about relationships. The entire album is just kind of like this evolved relationship. One of my favorite tracks on this album is a song called Life Crisis. Life Crisis. And again, that's Nick Pollock on guitar. Now, after Tanks of Zen, Nick joined up with another guitar player from a Seattle band that you guys know well, Michael Wilton of Queensryche. A lot of people forget, Queensryche was kind of like the first big rock band from Seattle since Heart. Queensryche was huge. Still have a huge following around the world. They don't break in America like they used to, but still can go play over in Europe and sell out stadiums. It's nuts. But when Michael left Queensryche, he put a band together called Soulbender. Now, the first album sounds a lot like Alice in Chains. A ton like Alice in Chains. If you can find that, I think you'll dig it. I don't know if it's on Spotify or not, but Soulbender 2 is on Spotify and on Apple Music. And there is a track on there. It's very interesting. It's kind of got a longer intro, and there's like some Spanish-speaking stuff. There's just a lot of stuff going on to kind of set the tone. And I think that kind of comes from the Queensryche side of things. That's a track called Fix Me, not to be confused with the 10-year song, completely different. But Soulbender is, again, one of those bands that maybe, as a side project type thing, if you're looking for a band, it might be a little more unique in some respects. But also, too, if you're a fan of Queensryche, maybe you don't know that part of Michael Wilton's catalog that well. It's worth your time to listen to. After that, Nick Pollock put together a band called The National Guard. They only released a couple tracks. There's an interesting one, though, called Inauguration Day. That's going to be your number 5 song. And that kind of wraps up our Nick Pollock portion of our list here. And he was not the original guitar player of Sleaze / Alice in Chains. He came a little bit later after Zoli Sevenate left the band. We'll get to Zoli a little bit later. I think you'll dig it. Now, another band that kind of like My Sister's Machine, that if you love that early 90s Seattle sound, you're going to love this band. You're going to absolutely love this band. It's a band called Second Coming, and that's put together by Johnny Bakalis and I guess I was wrong early on. Sanctuary and Evermore were Jim Shepherd. Johnny Bakalis was involved with Second Coming. If you don't know Second Coming, and maybe you're traveling today, and you just want to listen to some tunes, and maybe you're tired of your playlist, let me tell you, put this band on, because it's going to sound so incredibly familiar to you, because so much of the elements of Alice in Chains are in Second Coming. And it's not like they're ripping off Alice in Chains, because Johnny, of course, was one of the founding members of Sleaze and Alice in Chains. And so, again, you can hear a lot of those elements in Johnny's music that you appreciate with Alice in Chains. So we're going to go with a track called Confessional. And I absolutely dig this one, man. I mean, absolutely love this track. I think you're going to dig it, too. So Second Coming, I guess, had 2 albums that came out, maybe a little bit more, maybe. Why don't we just check, Steve? Yeah, we'll check here. So on the Second Coming debut album, if you can find it, Love Evil, Layne Staley actually does a guest appearance on a track called It's Coming After. You can find that on YouTube, and you probably would have to find a hard copy of the CD. It's not on Apple Music. But when they had the big album release, Layne got up on stage and sang with the band. So they were still friends, and this is in 94, right? I mean, this is much later, after Alice in Chains was established, you know. And they remained friends pretty much throughout throughout his life, through Layne's life. But again, Second Coming, let's see here if I can find these Second Coming discography, right? So, Love Evil, we talked about that one, if you can find it. And then there's Second Coming, the self-titled album, and then 13, an acoustic. So, be sure and check that out. Three albums, studio albums, and then an acoustic EP. So, Love Evil, Second Coming, 13, and then the acoustic EP. The Love Evil album came out on Red Rocket Records way back in 94, and then Second Coming, a self-titled album in 98. And that's where Confessional comes from. Now, we mentioned earlier that, let's see if we can get back to our notes here. Let's see. Yeah, Sleaze, yeah. So, Zoli, who was the original guitar player in Alice in Chains, left the band and joined this pretty established punk rock band called the Dehumanizers. And they were a band in the mid to late 80s. It was really kind of doing some interesting things. And there was a guy named Lou Guzzo that was very, like, anti-punk. And he was very much, he was one of these critics, right, that got a lot of airplay. But nevertheless, he had made some comment about how, you know, punk music should be, and you can hear this in the track, that, you know, the punk rock was just not healthy, and that parents should be aware of what their children were listening to. And so they kind of rose to prominence with their song, Kill Lou Guzzo. Yeah, for sure. And even though that song was, way back in 86, it's found its way to iTunes here in the last decade or so. All right, and so that kind of wraps up our tree, but we had some more room to fill, right? So number two, I thought we'd go with River of Deceit from Mad Season. And again, my feelings about this album are different than a lot of people. I love everything Layne Staley did. I thought the Mad Season album was a little bit watered down, and I wanted it to be great, but it's not great. Not to me. River of Deceit is amazing. And, it's got that cartoon version of kind of Layne on the cover. And it all kind of came together, you know, because of a project to try to save Layne's life. And it didn't work out. Layne dies of a drug overdose. John Baker Saunders dies of a drug overdose. Mike McReady, continues on, and then Barrett Martin, who was the drummer in Screaming Trees, was also part of the project to kind of, the whole point was to let's save Layne's life, let's give him something to do while Jerry's out there doing the Boggy Depot thing. What's interesting too is a couple of the guys that were involved in Sleaze ended up working with Jerry too. So it was kind of, this whole homogenized part of the Seattle sound, and so many people have gone out and talked about, well, everybody just got along so well. The Alice in Chains camp appeared to really, they really did get along. Like when they broke up the original Sleaze band, many of them continued to work together. And in fact, Soulbender with Michael Wilton and Nick Pollack, when they had the first year of the Layne Staley Foundation benefit concert, Soulbender played the show. Yeah, so there were a lot of people involved in the Alice in Chains family that were never truly estranged from the Alice in Chains family. And of course, if you read all the jealousy and pettiness and envy that went on in the Seattle rock scene, there's just so many people today that just live in, in an alternate reality. Kurt Cobain, of course, a very polarizing figure in Seattle, because of the fact that he talked so poorly of Alice in Chains and talked so poorly of Soundgarden at times, and certainly of Pearl Jam. Not so much about Soundgarden as they were label mates, and you may not know this either. And again, in some ways, this is a tribute to Nirvana. When they signed their record deal with Sub Pop, you know how much money they made? I mean, honestly, you know what the record deal was? $600. $600. So for all of you revisionist history folks out there, there was not major label interest in that band. And I think that's one of those things that makes Nevermind all the more amazing. And again, it is a corporate rock creation. You know, people are like, oh, well, Bleach was doing this. Bleach really took off after Nevermind did. Bleach was not selling well, despite what other people will tell you. But because of the success of Nevermind, people are like, hey, I got to get more of this band. They went back to Bleach. And a lot of people that are like true Nirvana fans and not just sheep, they like the Bleach album better than Nevermind because it more encapsulates what Kurt's true vision was for the band. So there you go. But number one, and all roads lead back to Motley. All roads lead back to Motley Crue. Do you know the first song that Layne Staley ever sang with the band Sleaze during his audition was Looks to Kill? It's a well-documented fact. All of the members of the band that have been interviewed have said, yeah, we love the fact that he sounded a lot like Vince Neil. And I guess it was Bacalus that says, hey, that whole part when he goes, well, she's a cool, cool black. We love the fact that he could hit that note so effortlessly. And again, at this point, he was very shy and reserved and really didn't know about the whole singing aspect of it. But isn't it incredible to think that Layne Staley's singing career began in a garage somewhere with a bunch of high school friends looking to play covers, and then the first song they played was Motley Crue's Looks to Kill. Yeah. So there you go. I think this is a super cool list, and not just because of the stories, but because of the music itself. And if you love Alice in Chains, I think you owe it to yourself to listen to some of this. Now, Sanctuary and Nevermore, those are really a little bit harder, right? Sanctuary especially, but Nevermore, even though Shepherd and those guys were like, hey, we're kind of anti-grunge, there is a few elements of grunge in the Nevermore stuff, especially Garden of Grey. But of the bands that we listed today, I think you'll really dig Soulbender, especially if you can find that first album. But My Sister's Machine, and then certainly Second Coming. Second Coming is a band, if the industry hadn't changed, because, you know, grunge only lasted about 15 minutes, I think Nevermore is one, excuse me, Second Coming is one of those bands that you would probably have had more acclaim. So I share that with you because I love you, and I want you guys to, number one, have a correct accounting of what actually happened, but also too, to get turned on to some new music that may have, you know, the air of familiarity to it. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. The best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on Twitter at Dogmatic67. It's DawgMatic67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. Just hit subscribe, right? That doesn't hurt you to do that. Just makes it easier for you to find the list. And that's what we're doing, is trying to keep you in tune with new music, remind you of some old favorites, and maybe turn you on to some bands that maybe you're unfamiliar with. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart. Campus Bookmart is a Starkvillian institution. They have served this wonderful fan base for so many years. They continue to do the best job around, right? I love the fact that it's a place that's owned by Bulldogs, run by Bulldogs, and for Bulldogs. A lot of people out there looking for your apparel dollar. But sometimes you may buy clothes from them, and then the money ends up somewhere else, maybe in the coffers of another school somewhere. Yeah, that's, you know, important to understand. But these people at Campus Bookmart are Bulldogs through and through. And again, I like keeping the business in the family whenever we can. Go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, we'd love for you to support a Starkville business, because we know you love Starkville. Hit them up online at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And again, graduation's about 2 months away. So be maybe thinking ahead here to be the favorite grandparent or to be the favorite aunt or uncle. Maybe think about that diploma frame for your Mississippi State spring graduate. I'm just kind of planting a seed there. That's a great gift. It's a timeless gift. Because how many times are you going to buy a diploma frame? Never, right? You'll get the first one. It'll stay in there forever. And then every time that they look at that, they're going to remember, hey, you know what? Uncle Billy gave me that, you know, right? It's an important aspect of it. The thoughtful, timeless gift is always so incredibly important. And this is one of those things that I think that you will be glad that you were a part of to help your Mississippi State graduate commemorate the accomplishment and to celebrate that with a classy diploma frame from Campus Bookmart. All right, let's look ahead to some basketball. It feels like forever since we played. I mean, maybe it's just me. But when we're winning, you know, I want to play every day. You know, and there's so many of us, of course, that they kind of cheer for the logo. But how many years, you know, we were struggling a little bit in football. You know, Rick Stansberry's basketball Bulldogs with Jamont Gordon, Charles Rhodes give us something to be proud of and think about, you know, something to be proud about. You know, and as I mentioned on Wednesday's show, you know, we're on the precipice of doing something that only Rick Stansberry's done. Let's go to four consecutive NCAA tournaments. Yeah. And, you know, I think not that we can afford to coast, but we're where we need to be right now. Bulldogs 19-7, and of course 7-6 in the SEC. We're going to be on the road. We're actually 6-2 in true road games. Yeah, even though we've lost some big ones at the hump, we've actually lost twice as many at home as we have on the road in true road games. But 6-2. And those are the things that kind of matter. Those differentiate you from your peers whenever they're doing resume comparisons and in state 4-1 on a neutral floor. So 10-3 away from the hump and 9-4 in the hump. And guess who we played this weekend? We're on the road. Yeah, we're on the road this weekend at Oklahoma. It's been a difficult year for Oklahoma, as you guys are well aware. And it's one of those things, too, a lot of times you don't pay attention to these teams that are somewhat new to the conference until we get ready to play them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're not going to just sit down one night and say, yeah, I'm going to watch Oklahoma play, you know. Just don't always work out that way. If you're like me, though, sometimes, I mean, I've always got it on. I've always got, you know, something on. And so you kind of peek at it from time to time. Maybe you don't sit down and study it and come up with your own scouting report, but kind of going through the Sooners season this year, you know, again, 16-10 overall, 3-10 in the SEC, soon to be 3-11, hopefully. They are 10-4 at home, but they have lost five consecutive games. They're 1-6 away from their home venue in true road games and 5-0 on neutral floors. Maybe they should play on neutral floors more often. But, yeah, this is a game, obviously, that we need to go in here and take care of business. But let's kind of look and see how they got here. They opened up well enough. You know, you open up the year on a, you know, what, 13-game winning streak. And so you just kind of cruise through non-conference. And it wasn't like they were just playing Tulsa and playing the Oklahoma A&M, you know. They take care of Lindenwood, as they should. It's Northwestern State, Stetson, East Texas A&M, Providence by two, and they play that down at the Paradise Island, Bahamas, as probably in the battle for Atlantis. Then they get Arizona by five, and then Louisville by five. So a couple of Power Five opponents down in that kind of made-for-TV tournament. It's on the ESPN Family Networks. But they sweep that. They get into the SEC-ACC Challenge, and they host Georgia Tech, and they win that game by 15. Blast Alcorn State. They get Oklahoma State. So what is that now? Five? Four? Power Four programs? in non-conference. So it's not like you can just say, hey, they're just beating up on Louisiana School for the Blind. You know, they're getting after it, right? In addition to that, they're in the Jumpman Invitational. They beat Michigan by one in Charlotte, North Carolina. Then things ease up a little bit. They get Central Arkansas. They win that game by 23, and then a 22-point victory over Prairie View. So you're kind of cruising in and feeling really good about life. And, 13-0. Going into SEC play, and again, listen, some of these Power 4 teams they played are not having banner years, but you commend them for putting them on the schedule. It'd be one thing if you look up and say, hey, you know, they lost a couple players for the year. This hasn't been the case. It's been a much more difficult run in SEC play. And again, I think that speaks to the strength of the conference. They open up at Alabama, which is never easy, and they get beat 107-79. Then they host A&M and lose by two. They go to Georgia, which is, you know, Georgia's been tough at home, as you guys are well aware. What, they 13-1 and we went in there? And they lose by 10 at Georgia. Then they lose by four at home to Texas. Well, they blast South Carolina by 20. And then they win at Bud Walton, 65-62. So you think, okay, we're kind of riding the ship. They lose at College Station to A&M by seven. And then they blast Vanderbilt. They're probably their most impressive SEC win so far. They win that one by 30. You go to Auburn, you get beat by 28. You go to Tennessee, you get beat by 18. You go to Missouri. I guess they hosted Tennessee. You go to Missouri and get beat 82-58. You lose at home to LSU, 82-79. Who is playing a little bit better? And then you go to Florida and you get beat by 22. Now, Chris Jan said yesterday, hey, you look at it on you wouldn't know it looking at tape, but their record, and they've actually played some close games. They have played some close games, but it's kind of been a while since they played a close game. We talk about this five-game losing streak that they're on right now. You know, these games were not largely competitive. I mean, again, looking back at the numbers, 98-70 is not competitive. 70-52 is not competitive. 82-58 is not competitive. The LSU game, one of the worst teams in the league, you lose that one by three. That's a competitive game, and you'd expect that by teams that are kind of evenly situated. Then you go to O'Connell and get beat by 22. So in this five-game losing streak, four of those games have been blowout losses. You know, you kind of look at what's left for them, too. You know, everybody goes to the tournament this year, the SEC tournament. But, you know, barring them winning it, they're not going to make the tournament. And again, you think you play this beefy non-conference schedule, you think it prepares you. But, again, I think it speaks to the quality of our league that they can go undefeated in non-conference play and then be considered one of the worst teams in the conference. But so after they play us, they'll welcome Kentucky, and that's never an easy proposition, no matter what Kentucky's record is. Then you got to go to Ole Miss, and then Missouri, a team that handled you, comes into your place, and then you travel to Texas. And so every night's a tough night in this league, but it's a very challenging stretch for them. You know, you almost feel like, you know what, they're probably just kind of ready for this thing to end, and maybe so. I'm sure maybe the players don't feel that way, but this is a team that has not had much of a post presence. And in this league, too, I mean, there's not a team that, you know, you don't have that dominant post guy you look at and say, hey, you build this team around him. But you've got to have some people that can rebound and block shots, and they really struggle with that. Averaging 77 points a game, giving up 73. So a scoring margin of plus four for them. Shooting about 46% from the floor, right at 36% from beyond the arc. So, again, you know, one of these situations, too, where, you know, it's kind of like the game against A&M. You know, not necessarily prolific from beyond the arc, but they're knocking down about eight a game. You know, so maybe a little bit better than A&M, but, you know, it's a comparable thing. It's not like a team that's just, you know, that's going to go out there and you'd expect them to just kind of light you up from distance. pretty good free throw shooting team, almost 80%, which is really good on the men's side. Rebounding again, 32.4. They're getting out-rebounded. I mean, how many SEC teams do you look at in the totality of their season and they're getting out-rebounded? About a board and a half a game. They've handed out 350 assists and allowed 306, so it's a minor differential in favor of the Sooners. They've turned it over 324 times. They forced 339. That breaks down to 12.5 plus or minus, excuse me. So 12.5 turnovers per game for Oklahoma and 13 for their opponents. So it's basically six one way, half a dozen the other. The margin is 0.6. And they haven't necessarily been a great defensive team either. You know, 212 steals against and in 194-4. You know, so the numbers are very comparable. They've actually given up more block shots, 66 block shots for Oklahoma, and they've had their shot back 93 times. There's just nothing you look at here on the team statistics that jumps out and says, hey, this is a quality team, which the record reflects that. Jalen Moore, or Jalon Moore, I guess is the correct pronunciation, averaging 17 points a game. I guess let's look at the conference numbers. That's probably more important for our standing, right? But again, he's still the leading scorer with 16.2 points a game. Jeremiah Fears, 12.8. Outside of that, not much. Bryson Goodine, almost double figures in SEC play. Duke Miles with 8.3 points a game, and from there it's kind of evenly distributed, you know, but it's not a prolific scoring team. 3-point percentage in SEC play. You got a couple guys shooting almost 40%, and that's more in Duke Miles. Jeremiah Fears has actually shot the most 3-point attempts in SEC play. I guess it's second most. Goodine has shot the most, and he's 30 of 60. So that's a kind of a loud statistic, right? But Fears at 25, and then Moore at 39. Miles at 38, so they're going to be opportunistic with it, and I guess Bryson Goodine's the guy you got to watch. He started 10 of 13 SEC games for them, and where's number two? Yeah, and so we played a lot better on the perimeter the last couple ball games, and that'll have to continue. But again, rebounding, you know, in SEC play only. They don't have anybody averaging more than 5.5 boards a game. It's a team problem. You know, it's kind of a personnel problem. And how many times do we say it? Rebounding is about attitude and effort. And you're getting out rebounded by four boards a game, and you're in a Power Four conference. That is not a recipe for success, you know. But the things that stand out to me is just, you know, these rebounding numbers and the fact that they just don't appear to have a great post presence, at least statistically. When you kind of work through all this stuff, and you said they're just numbers on a screen, but the reality of it is this is the evidence of a team. They do have a propensity to turn the basketball over, and as good as we have played defensively, again, I expect to win the game. Those are my feelings. You may feel a little bit differently, but even though it's a road game, I expect to win it because we've been so good on the road. Let's kind of look at the SEC schedule, too, and kind of look at some of these teams around us because, you know, we're kind of scoreboard watching ourselves. You know, we are even with Kentucky with a 7-6 conference record. We're a game back of Tennessee and Ole Miss. That's it. So a really good chance of finishing the top half of this league. But looking at the schedule for tomorrow, you got Tennessee at A&M. You've got a win over A&M. You get a loss to Tennessee, and you trail Tennessee in the standings. So our rooting interest is Texas A&M. You got Ole Miss at Vanderbilt. You know, Ole Miss a game ahead of us in the schedule, on the standings. You get two wins over them, so you start kind of thinking about that, right? I mean, you know, what's better for Mississippi State? Well, you've got the win over Vanderbilt, too. And I think, again, if we have to root for Ole Miss to win something in order for us to advance, we probably don't deserve it. So we're going to pull for Vanderbilt. Georgia is at Auburn. You like Auburn here. Kentucky, of course, is at Alabama. That could be a barn burner, but, you know, I think it favors Alabama being at home. Florida's at OSU. You think Florida there. And then, you know, Missouri's at Arkansas, Texas at South Carolina. And then, you know, next week it gets awfully interesting again. But, you know, we've put ourselves in a good position, but we could use a little help to kind of get up in the standings a little bit. And, of course, you know, the net always seems to matter because it's, you know, it's not just about who you beat, but it's, you know, who you beat beats. But, yeah, I mean, you start working through this thing and you start thinking. I had somebody ask me yesterday, Steve, do we really have a, you know, realistic chance to win, you know, three or four of these last ball games? And I would say yes. And that's, you start thinking about what does a 10-win record in this conference and kind of a historic year mean for a team like Mississippi State? Well, I think it means you're probably going to end up somewhere on 5 or 6 line, you know. With a little luck, maybe you can play your way up even more. But let's not get greedy. We're in, and I think we're safely in. We just got to continue to play well. And I think, you know, some good things are in store for us. And, you know, I don't know what happens long term. But I know this. What I'm focused on is getting a win over Oklahoma and then turning around Tuesday and seeing what we can do in Tuscaloosa. You just never know how these things are going to play out. But, again, I don't think even the most ardent supporter of Mississippi State basketball thought we were going to chase an SEC title this year. I think the hope for most people is, hey, can we finish in the top half of this league? Maybe. Maybe with some, you know, some upset wins, you make it to the top four, you know. And that's still a possibility. I don't know how realistic it is, but it's still a possibility when you look at the fact, you know, again, Tennessee and A&M right there ahead of you in Missouri. Missouri and A&M are right there at 9-4. We're just 2 games behind them. And so could be a scenario where we get some help, but we got to take care of our own stuff. That's the most important thing. And like many of you, I'm excited for that ball game tomorrow night. And, you know, we got so much going on, you know, to kind of keep up with these days. And there's a lot to cheer for, and I think that's an important aspect of it too. You know, sometimes you get frustrated. You want to be able to, you know, to complain about it. You do. And, you know, as long as we don't involve the players in it, you know, I think it's part of the deal. But noon tomorrow. Noon tip tomorrow from Norman. So be on the SEC Network, so available to you through your ESPN app. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. No question about it. I've stayed there a few nights. It's a great place to just kind of relax and reconnect with your family and friends. We brought all the kids in, had everybody under one roof. You deserve to have that kind of joy in your life. You know, as the older they get, the more that kind of stuff matters. It's an important aspect of life, is reconnecting with those people that have been with you throughout the process. There's nothing better than having everybody together. So if you're coming to town for a ball game, consider staying at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's so much more affordable than booking 5 or 6 hotel rooms and have everybody scattered all over the place. 5 minutes into Mississippi State campus, just out past the Highlands, very easy to find, very easy to get back and forth to campus. You can do your tailgating right then and there. Saves you a little setup time and all the other things, too, that go along with that. But it doesn't have to be a ball game weekend. It can be just a chance for you to get together with everybody, make it a special weekend. Or it could be a work weekend or a work retreat. Maybe you've considered that. That's the way to go. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page auto-populates, and you can peruse the pictures of the amenities available to you and your guest. Also, some booking options come up. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO if you want to. Maybe you've got a credit. I don't know. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. How cool is that? Just by listening to our show, you get a promo code to stay at the premier place in the Golden Triangle. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, make your plans today. Okay, it's been if I can get my throat clear here, spend the midweek break for our ladies. Had the opportunity to kind of get their legs under them a little bit as we prepare for, you know, it's kind of coming down the home stretch here. You know, tough loss to Florida, not a good loss. That's a resume wrecker right there, even though it is a road game. However, we're 18-9 overall, 5-8 in the conference. We've got to close strong. We absolutely do. And, you know, you go back and think about the win at Vanderbilt and what that means to you. And then, you know, you have an opportunity to take a step forward and you take a step back. So Bulldogs will be in action at 2 p.m. on Sunday. That also is available through the ESPN app. And then Texas comes to down on Thursday. We head to Auburn. So just three regular season games left. And you feel like State should win two of those three. Should. You might need to get a game in a tournament just to feel even better about getting the NCAA tournament. But this Texas A&M team, you know, it's been an interesting year for them. You remember some time ago, you know, Kennedy Carter was there. We had some incredible games against Texas A&M. Lots changed there. Since that time, a lot has changed here since that time. But let's kind of look and see how the year has gone for the Lady Aggies. They are 10-15 overall, 3-10 in conference. They are 0-7 in true road games and 1-2 on a neutral floor. So outside of College Station, Texas, they are 1-9. They've lost seven games in a row. So this is a team that is ripe for the picking. We have to win this game, period. They open up the year with a loss to A&M Corpus Christi. I bet nobody saw that coming. And it wasn't like some fluky thing. They got beat by 14. They bounced back to beat Texas San Antonio, kind of rolled through Western Michigan. Lose at number 15, West Virginia, 83-62. They blast Northwestern State. They lose down in the battle for Atlantis against Villanova, Ball State, and then bounce back to beat Southern Miss 79-57. So they leave there with, you know, one win. In the SEC-ACC Challenge, they take care of Syracuse for us, win that game by 12, and then get blasted at home by number 13, Kansas State. They get by Texas Southern by 25. They beat Mississippi Valley. And now you're in the SEC play. You open up at number 15, Tennessee at home. You lose that game by 13. Somehow, some way, they found a way to beat Ole Miss by 2 there in College Station. They go to South Carolina. No shame in losing there. They get beat 90-49. They go to the Lloyd Noble Center there in Norman, Oklahoma, and get beat by 15. They beat Georgia, which you know, is kind of, you know, maybe not the accomplishment that it once was. They win that game by 5. And then they get up, you know, again, kind of string some things together here, and they get number 11, Kentucky, by 6. They go to LSU, lose 64-51. They get blown out at Arkansas by a very pedestrian Arkansas team in Fayetteville. Vic and the Longhorns get them by 70. They go to Neville Arena at Auburn. And, you know, Auburn and Johnny Harrison have really struggled this year. You lose that game by 13. Lose at home to Missouri. You know, we can't talk too much trash about that. We went up there and lost at their place, but at least that was in Como rather than Starkville. They go to Alabama and lose 88-49. They lose to Florida 74-52, and now they head to Starkville. And again, a game we got to have. And there's three games left on the schedule, a road trip to State, then they go to Vandy, and then at home against Arkansas. And so you begin to look at this and say, you know what, it's just not going to be the year they need it to be. But, you know, 10 losses already with just three games to play. You're guaranteed a losing record unless you just go on a run here late. That's certainly not expected. Let's just kind of take a look here inside the numbers and kind of see kind of how it's all coming together for the Aggies. And, you know, my whole feeling is we just need a win. Right, we just need to win the game, and that's kind of where State is right now. If you win the games you're supposed to win, you finish up with you know, two of the last three. But yeah, outscored this year significantly Their opponents have outscored them by over 100 points this year. They're averaging 62.5 points a game, giving up almost 67, so a net difference of minus 4.3. Shooting right at 40% from the field, 25% from beyond the arc. Free throw shooting has kind of been an adventure too, less than 70% for that. Rebounding, they've actually are plus 2.5 in the rebounding column on a nightly basis. They've handed out 318 assists. That works out to 12.7 per game. They've allowed 13.4. Turnovers have been a huge problem, averaging 17 a game, only forcing 13.8, so that's a negative 3.2 differential there. Just 13 points a game off turnovers, allowing almost 19 off turnovers. They've stolen the ball 145 times and then had it stolen 207, so just under 6 per, and then over 8 against. 112 blocks on the year, and the Heather shot block is 87 times, so plus 1 on the average. But looking at individual numbers here, we'll look overall here. Aicha Koulibaly, 12.8 points per game. That is the only double-digit scorer on the team. Sahara Jones just behind her at 9.5. Jada Malone at 8.4. Soleil Williams right at 8 points a game. And from there, it's pretty evenly distributed. But again, this is a team that just struggles offensively in a major way. We talked about rebounding. Jones has kind of been the best one, but it's not a sizable difference. She's pulled down 175 total rebounds. Lauren Ware also with 162, and Jada Malone with 117. I mean, everybody's got a leader here, but the bulk of their rebounds coming from basically three players, and Koulibaly with 95. But it's one of those things, you just kind of work through all this and you kind of begin to ask yourself, where could we go wrong, right? Now, we've learned at Mississippi State never to just take anything for granted, because in this league, if you don't bring your best effort, you're going to get beat. But this is one of the worst conference teams that we have played this year. So Sam and the ladies absolutely have to get this thing done. Kind of looking at the standings and kind of seeing where things stand with the Bulldogs. And again, we expected to be middle of the pack and hoped to be in the top half of this league when it was all said and done. And the league still has, some respect around here. And we have a real chance to do that. But you start thinking about kind of what's left in these three games. You're probably going to end up 7-9. So you're probably going to end up two games beneath 500 in SEC play. And I don't think that's going to be enough to get you in the top half of the league. And it won't be, even just the way things sit right now, even if you won all three of these games, and we certainly don't expect, even finishing 500 is going to probably have you in the second half of the league. So that's where things sit, but we certainly can't afford to allow Florida to catch us or pass us. They're even with us at 5-8. Of course, the overall record is much better for Mississippi State, but we'll start at the bottom here. Arkansas, Georgia, Missouri all 2-11. Of course, one of Missouri's wins over us. Texas A&M 3-10 in the league. Auburn 3-10. So two of your final three opponents have won a combined 6 games. And you couple that with front-running Texas. Florida's 5-8. State's 5-8. Vanderbilt 6-7. So you get a little help there. Maybe you can catch Vanderbilt. And you've won over Vanderbilt, so maybe that's one of those things that just help you in seeding in the SEC tournament. Perhaps it helps you on selection Monday. Tennessee right there at 7-6. Alabama, Oklahoma, Ole Miss all right there at 8-5. Kentucky 10-3. We played them early in the year and we knew they were an improved team, or 21-4 overall. LSU, a game out of first. Texas and South Carolina are tied at 12-1. However, Texas wins the head-to-head matchup, so they would be the number one overall seed in the SEC tournament should the tournament start now. Longhorns have won 10 games in a row. But that's how things stand. And you know, there's still some things that we can do to salvage something from this season. And I think one of the things we got to ask ourselves is, you know, how important is women's basketball going to be to us? And, you know, for a while it was incredibly important. Even when we couldn't make games, everybody tuned in. And it was fun. It was. We got a great recruiting class coming in. And, you know, last year, you know, we had some challenges on the injury front. You know, this year, for the most part, we've been healthy. You know, we did miss Destiny McFall in that ball game against Missouri. You probably win that game handily should she play, but hey, that's the totality of a season. That's what happens. Injuries are part of the game. You got to have the depth to overcome that. And so the bottom line for us is we got to win this week, and then we'll take care of next week. But Mississippi State, in my estimation, has to win two of these last three to be a tournament team. And you lose these last three, and you know, it's not going to work out at all. And I guess unless you win the SEC tournament, which we certainly don't expect that to happen, because there are some quality teams in this conference. That's not the poor mouth our team. We're just not as good as some of these teams at the top of the conference. And so that's where things stand. Hey, if you hadn't done so, go to DirtyNobleBook.com. You can order signed copies of The Dude, and all of my sports titles are there. That's Flim Flam, Stark Billings, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, and then, of course, my memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And we'd love for you to come float at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Been very busy as of late, and especially on the weekends. Got a busy weekend ahead of us. And we encourage you, whether you're an in-towner or out-of-towner, to plan ahead and call 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to Dana. She can book you online. Or you can download the True Rest app and book online, and it shows up right there on our screen. You don't have to talk to anybody, but you know, I think it's worth it. But if you're a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or pain, or you just need a break, we may be able to help you. Come and float. Take some time to yourself. You'll be glad you did. It has helped me so much from an anxiety standpoint and a mental acuity standpoint, because I'm a person that is constantly engaged mentally. Like, as soon as my eyes spring open, I'm already thinking about what all I got to do for the day. I already have this mental list, and I never go through a day accidentally. You know, I always like to have a plan, and it helps me to plan floating regularly. It just kind of gives me some mental clarity, and so perhaps that could happen for you too. It's a great experience. It's not like floating in your pool. It's a much different experience, and you know, listen, it's a great date night opportunity for you too. And a reminder, first month is $1 at jeanspage.com, just $1, and that gets you through, of course, the next 4 weeks. That gets you into conference play in baseball. It gets you through the SEC tournaments on the men's and the women's side, and nobody's going to bring you better coverage of that than we are. One of the things I'm going to encourage you guys to do too, talking about the anxiety aspect of life and the stress part of life, and the, you know, I told you guys before, I attended a Franklin Covey planning class called What Matters Most years ago. Brian Ragland was the facilitator, and it really changed my life. Because of the fact that I was always a person that's kind of got by on being smart and not necessarily being organized. And one of the things that helps me is, like, you know, making lists and things like that. Because when you write things down, it kind of it frees your mind to focus on something else. You know, how many times do you think, I've got to commit this to memory because I got to get this taken care of, right? Lately, I've kind of done that. You know, I kind of got out of what I do well. And that yesterday was kind of my clean out the closet day. What I mean by that is, all these little stressors that were like hanging around, like I needed to set up an online banking thing for our accountant, and unfortunately there was a young lady that died back home, and I had to write a poem for the family, and so all that stuff is like in my head. There's all these little bitty things I got to do, and so I sat down yesterday and I just made a list of all the things that I had been putting off, and maybe some things that have been kind of, you know, giving me grief, and I got them done. And some days you got to take a day like that, you know, and maybe it's not today. Maybe you say, okay, here's what we're going to do. I've got kind of a break in the schedule on Tuesday. Tuesday is going to be my day to get caught up on all this stuff. So I would encourage you to do that, because like when I went to bed last night, even though I didn't sleep really well, because, you know, Dana woke me up a couple times, and with her scurrying around trying to find the remote, and then, you know, it happens, right? And then I felt a migraine coming on. I said, I'm going to get up, take some medication. And I said, well, while I'm up, I'll go ahead and knock out the show. And so here we are. We've got that done. So it makes for an easier work day. So I'm going to go probably get a couple hours sleep, and we'll head to Duty Noble Field. Reminder, ball game at 2 today. Moved up from 4 to 2. And we'll be recapping the game, obviously, and then I'll probably find a way to get some bones up for you guys, too, on Friday. A lot of official visits being scheduled these days. But, again, it always pays to have a plan. I just don't like to be a person that reacts to life. I like to kind of facilitate as much of my life as I can. And I encourage you to do the same. It just changed my life to be able to, you know, to kind of make a running diary of the things I do each day. And then all of a sudden at the end of the day, you look up and it's like, man, look at all I accomplished today. You know, it's like every time I did something, I just write it down. Did this, did that, did this. And there's just something about writing it down, the act of physically putting pen to paper and writing those things down. And maybe you do it in your notes, but for me, there's just something euphoric about writing it down in my notepad here in front of me that I've got this thing done. So one of the things that I had written down yesterday that we're doing today is a boneyard. Even though I record every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I write that down. When I get it done, I put that line through it. Man, it makes you feel so good to put the line through it and know you've got it done. But, you know, one of the things that aggravates me about life is sometimes people are up or delegate things to me. Oh, well, you need to talk to Steve about that. You know, one of the things that I've always tried to do is everybody that works for me, I like to empower them to be decision makers and facilitators to kind of get things done. There are some things that require my attention, but I've always felt that empowering your employees is the best thing to do. It makes your life better, but makes the whole operation run a lot smoother, because the last thing you want is a customer like, oh, they finally get a hold of somebody and it's like, oh no, you got to talk to Steve about that, you know. And Steve's a busy guy. Steve doesn't always have time to mess with that kind of stuff. And so I just found a way to, hey, it's like when I was in the furniture business, I used to tell my employees, you might as well give the customer what they want, because by the time they get to me, if they get to me, that's what I'm going to give them anyway. And it's going to make you look a little bit silly. So I would rather you be the champion and the hero to these people. So if you're a person in management, let me encourage you, maybe find that What Matters Most course. I don't know if they've changed it over the years. I'm sure they have. They always rebrand and remarket things and kind of give you the old product in a new wrapper. But part of that is employee empowerment. And I just think, too, it's one of those things where, like, you know, my guys, my writers will hit me up, hey, what do you think about this story? Hey, just run it. You know, run it. If you think enough of it, you don't need my approval. Just go ahead and run the story, you know. Those things, I think, are important, too, to kind of give people some ownership in the decision-making process. Listen, I hope that you guys have a great weekend. I hope we have a great weekend on the fields and courts of play. You know, we really need to sweep Missouri State. And I say that just because of the fact that 6-1 sounds so much better than 5-2, especially with us heading to Houston next week. You know, we need to bank as many of these non-conference wins as we can get. We need as many weekend sweeps as we can get. And especially a team like Missouri State that we think is going to be a pretty solid mid-major. You know, they're not going to be a top 20 RPI team, but they're going to be a team that we think is going to help us in the RPI. So we need to get as many wins as we can over them. And for those of you making the trip to Duty Noble Field, we encourage you bring a blanket, bring some money for some hot chocolate or some coffee as well. Dress warm. It's not going to be typical baseball weather, but it is going to be typical February weather. And then, of course, for all of you in the greater Norman, Oklahoma area making your way to the game, thank you for doing that to go out and celebrate and support our Bulldogs. And for all of you making the trip to town on Sunday to cheer for the ladies, we appreciate that too. We have a lot to be excited about and a lot to cheer for, but we've got some work to do kind of on all fronts, and fan involvement, fan engagement is a big part of that. Hey, until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.